So we'll get started again. And we might start by thinking of the networks were there to transport data. And we can think of having end users or applications or devices who want to send this data to a remote location. And one view is just that the network offers you some way of doing that, which you don't have to think too hard about. Yeah. And so it used to be sort of easy. When we said we were transporting data, we were either transporting a voice signal, nice regular bandwidth requirements, or we were sending a file or something that's, you know, when it got there, it got there. That's great. Nowadays, again, we have a huge number of applications that send data with different characteristics. So we can have file sharing, so you are just sending either a whole file or portions of a file. Web browsing, sort of an interactive, you're getting interactive. Voice over IP, you're getting interactive, and you've got some requirements that get there in a timely fashion. Streaming video, maybe not interactive, but still better get there in a timely fashion. Now we've got our devices sending data. They might be sending little bits of data. Those little bits might get aggregated into big files worth of data. And possibly we're getting responses to that sort of data. Okay. Depending what you're doing, then you have different requirements for how that data is sent or transmitted. You have a bandwidth requirement, which says I need a certain bit rate, I need these things to be, I want to send at a certain rate, and pretty much you need the other end to be receiving it at that same rate. Okay. You have issues of delay, so always if you're sending it over any network, it's not instantaneous. It's not particularly any worse for wireless networks, except in the sense that, again, it's a third component loss and you need to resend. Well, you might factor that into a delay component. And loss, typically for wireless networks, is going to be higher than for wired. And you also have uncertainty of the from packet to packet to packet, how they're going to be received versus how they're sent. Okay. Now, again, I would have discussed in a bit basic networks course how we might view this globally from end to end for a network. The view we'll be taking now is how do we view it along a point-to-point connection. So we're getting that access link to the network, and how can we support some sort of quality of service along just that single link. Typically, you still have all the same back-end issues, or not. We would have also argued that a lot of this occurs because of the edge effects. Okay. So, again, the ITUT is the body of the ITU, which is involved in standardization. And so, this question of different applications and what quality of service requirements they had arose sort of in the mid-80s, okay. And at that point, they surveyed the types of applications and then categorized them according to their requirements. So unfortunately, you get a lot less of that in there. It's been not something that's a bit more modern than that. Okay, so it looks like I took out the slides out of order, so this was supposed to come first. We've already talked about it again. This extreme example of the different requirements are voice data. And again, the gold standard that was provided by telephony networks until recently was that you got a 64 kilobit per second stream. Okay, and so you, in order to reproduce a signal, you need to sample at twice the bandwidth. The bandwidth is 4,000 hertz, so you would sample at twice that, 8,000 times per second. And of course, if you want a digital representation, you have to digitize that sample. Okay, and we took 8 bits to do that, but obviously there was a bit of a rounding issue, you know, when you convert it to bits, but it gave you quite a good reproduction. The ear is quite forgiving, so if you actually didn't need to get every single sample in order to interpret the voice signal. Okay. On the other hand, if you were doing file transfer, the rate's not too important. Yeah, you'd like it to get there, but it doesn't have to get there in a microsecond. Or, you know, 10 seconds is the same as a minute, possibly. Probably not these days, but originally. On the other hand, if you miss a chunk out of the middle of the file, you're in trouble. Okay. Other examples, you can have control messages. These come in bursts. So the time at which you're generating them tends to be unpredictable. It'll be in response to something happening in your environment. The response time may matter, so actually getting that delay may matter. Losing it may or may not be a problem depending on how important the actual message is. Multimedia. Streaming in particular, rate is important, delay is important, the variability of delay is important. Again, loss can be handled, so you don't have to get every last bit. Okay. So, again, the ITUT surveyed all of these types of applications, and they categorized them. Were they interactive or not? What's a sort of typical data rate? What's the delay tolerance? What's the jitter tolerance? So again, variation on the delay, how much can be tolerated? What's the loss tolerance, and possibly others? So for video, it was noted that you have to sync up the audio portion of if you have an audio and a video stream separate, you got to sync them up or else the thing looks weird. Okay. And so they did an extensive survey of things and just, you know, I'm not going to quiz you on it. Just note that it exists. Based on that, they categorized the applications according to their requirements along two parameters. One is delay, so more critical, or typically if there's any person at the end, or sitting at the other end, less delay. If there's not an actual person, or for some reason been trained to expect delay, then you have more delay. And the second is whether you can tolerate loss or not. So, again, we will return to this when we have a discussion on quality of service. We will be looking at, in terms of just link performance, we will look at the likelihood of error relative to whatever sort of bit scheme, bit formation scheme you have, and also possibly the bandwidth that we can generate given any given scheme. But beyond that, typically you have to do something with how you're sharing out the actual resource, and we will return to that later. Okay. So, the first question we ask is, why does this matter when designing networks? And the second question is, does this matter when we're designing networks, or how well is this factored in when we're designing networks? And well, from a user standpoint, you'd like it to matter. You want your streaming video to get there. And design choices that are made for the networks do have an impact on whether that happens or not. Okay. And again, historically, the two main networks that we'd be thinking about would be the telephony network and the data network. And telephone networks were designed to transmit voice, these nice, steady bandwidth voice signals. Data networks were designed to transmit bursty signals, so communication with mainframes or possibly then some data transfer. Those historical beginnings are still sort of evident in the way that the networks are built. Okay. In particular, telephony networks are very interested in controlling the resources and making sure that there's a good allocation of the resources. And you know, sometimes that makes quality of service easier. May or may not be good for efficiency. Data networks efficient from a resource point of view, but they may or may not be able to deliver quality of service. The wireless networks have typically evolved from one or the other of these disciplines, either the telephony side of things or the data network side of things. So the design decisions that were made back then still come through. There's been a lot of, you know, going back and tinkering with it, but the basic design decisions are still there. Okay. The design decisions have an impact on possibilities for quality of service, and depending on where everybody is in their thinking, you may get more or less support for quality of service. Okay, so I've been saying there's two sorts of networks, really, telephone and data networks. There is this idea of convergence, and yeah, they're all doing pretty much everything these days. If we want to think about what is a network, well, they've networks have existed sort of pre-industrial revolution, okay, in some form or another. And the components are similar. So early networks would have been things like signal files, fires set on hilltops, so you knew when the enemy was coming. If you wanted to transmit slightly more complex messages, you could have flag systems, which allowed you to transmit up to sort of text messages. You could have messengers on horseback. They all share some characteristics with modern networks, okay? So the first of these is that you have to have some form of point-to-point communication. So that's either line of sight for a signal fire or a semaphore, or physically transporting a letter or some sort of message from point A to point B. There's an idea that that range of communication is limited. So if we want to extend that range, we have to relay the message somehow. Again, if it's a signal fire or a semaphore, we reproduce that message to some further point. If it's a horse, if it's a messenger on horseback, we change horses, maybe change messengers, and continue on carrying that message. Okay. And so that allows you to have some sort of decision then about the direction in which you're going to send the message and how far and to whom you send the message as well. Okay. So it's nice to think of just those basic characteristics. You have points. You have links between those points, and again, you move your message from point to point to point to get it to wherever its final destination is. Obviously, we're interested in delivering specific types of messages. Namely, we're going to look at collections of bits. Okay, so digital messages. Okay. Again, there's two main flavors of networks that deliver bits. The first is the telephone network, and it's the oldest network that's still of interest. So telephone exchanges were patented in 1878. They grew out of the old telegraph networks. Okay. They were designed to carry analog voice signals, but since the mid-80s, they've carried a digital signal. And again, the digital stream had a fixed characteristic of 64 kilobits per second. Okay. That being the case, telephone networks were designed in order to transmit these streams of data. Okay. And so they had a fixed way of looking at what should be, how we should transport data. Okay. Obviously now telephone networks carry all sorts of data. In particular, that they carry the packets, the bundles of bits, just as we would in a data network. Okay, so in your basic telephone network, you still have this idea of relay, even with the wire, there's sort of only so far, there's only so much range for even sending a signal over a wire. Additionally, signals need to go in different directions. You can't hook everybody up in sort of a pairwise fashion. So we have to have this idea of relays. We're not hooked up pairwise, so the resources that within the network have to be shared, okay? So the funds, same thing with the networks. It's hierarchical, so you have relatively low data rates at the edges, as is suitable for single users, and then all of the users' data gets aggregated into larger and larger bandwidth pipes. Okay. Originally, and it's still the mindset of a telephone company, things that were circuit switched, so you reserved all the resources you needed from end to end. So I was making my telephone call, I needed a pipe of 64 kilobits per second. And that was set up, that amount of bandwidth was reserved along each link that my data was going to travel along. And then once that was set up, all I needed to do was transmit. So there's some delay. You have to set up your connection. You have to propagate the data. Each individual bit has to move through a distance. That doesn't happen instantaneously. You have a small transmission delay in the sense that you are provided with a pipe, so the bits can be forwarded sort of one at a time. The main plus of the source system is that you have a guaranteed bandwidth. So once the resources are reserved, you don't have to worry about suddenly your bandwidth halving or something. Okay. Cellular networks arose from this background. Again, the initial goal of a cellular network would have been exactly the same, except instead of having a wire from your house to the exchange box, you would have a wireless signal from your phone to a base station or access point. But the goal would then be to give you all the resources you needed to maintain a fixed bandwidth connection. Okay. The internet is, about over 80 years later? And it, again, arose from a much different problem. Now we were computing, we had these things called computers. Computers were not PCs or smartphones. They were mainframes. So you had one per institution, or maybe a few per institution. And so people wanted to be able to get access to them. Originally, even that didn't exist. So my first interaction with a computer was writing a program on punch cards. So each command was a single card with little dots poked out of it, and your program was a stack of these. You carefully brought your stack up to a window somewhere, handed it in, prayed you didn't drop it in the meantime, and came back an hour later and would give you this printout saying that you had an error. So having a dumb terminal was great. Later, we wanted to have computer to computer, and have sort of human to human data exchange then. Okay. It was originally funded by the military. If they were thinking, we're in a battlefield and we want to talk to each other, how do we make sure that, our network doesn't get blown apart, or we're okay if there's a network, if the network gets blown apart, so it's also needed to be robust in terms of failure. Okay. the structure of the working internet is pretty much defined by the TCP/IP protocol suite. Okay, and what that essentially specifies is how we make an end-to-end connection and how we actually get packets from one end of the network to the other. Okay, this arose in not too much longer, in 1973, and became the only protocol in 1983. Okay, so you could argue that before that there was not even a hope of having something like the internet. Okay, so what were the characteristics of these original computer networks? Well, again, we wanted to have an extended range, so data had to be relayed. Resources were expensive, we had to share them. We wanted things to be robust in the face of failure, so that would mean that we wanted to have a lot of different possibilities for the path over which you set your data. So one path disappears, you just send it along a different path. The original characteristics of the data was that they were bursty. If you think about, hooking up to that mainframe, you're making keystrokes. That's dependent on, your typing ability and you having something to type, and then responses from the computer relative to that. There was no then predictable bandwidth requirement. It's not like you had a steady stream of data going one or two directions. Because of this, we decided you should divide the data into messages and send those messages individually into the network. And so the packet then is the message and data plus whatever information the network needs to process the data, to get the data from point A to point C. It was not viewed as efficient to set up a connection in order to transmit the packet. So you have one keystroke, and it's a bit of overkill to set up a dedicated link from one end of the network to the other, transmit that keystroke, tear it down. So the resources would be allocated on an as-needed basis only. Okay. This led to more quality of service issues. We have increased our transmission delay. Why? Because we have what's called store and forward, which means that a packet sent from across a link from one node to the next, it has to be received, analyzed, so you got to know, think about what to do with it, and then retransmit. So at the very least, each node you go through incurs another transmission delay. The packets are still moving over a distance, so there's a delay in physically moving bits. Finally, because of this lack of dedicated resources, we let packets just wait until resources become available. And so if too many packets arrive at a given node, they can't be transmitted out immediately, and they have to wait or incur a queuing delay. So that's the history. We had these, again, two sorts of networks. Both, if you think about, let's say, the 90s, both were very active, very still quite siloed. They were constructed and designed according to their initial data transport requirements. And a lot of the wireless networks that we observe evolve from one or the other of these. So cellular networks evolve from the telephony networks. The WiMAX, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, et cetera, evolved from the data network side of things. So we'll still see some of the original design choices present in these different types of networks. And again, they do cause different issues to arise in the wireless networks. Okay. In terms of services offered by these networks, there's a convergence. Data networks carry voice. Cellular networks carry data. Okay. And exactly how they provide these services varies. Okay. So that's a potted history of networks. Telephone versus data networks, so is the main sort of divide. There's a few concepts that are fairly fundamental to any discussion of networks. And so we'll have a discussion of these here. Nothing I say here today is directly examinable, but it's worth having, if you've got networks backward around them, this is all old hat to you. If not, it's worth just thinking about a little bit, okay? Because it'll clarify possibly some of the later discussions we have. Oops. Okay. So which concepts are we going to discuss? The first one, again, is the idea of network services. And again, if I'm an end user, I just want to think of my data being sent into the network and arriving at its destination. I want as little as possible to do with how that happens. And so, as an end user, typically, we think of the network as offering a data delivery service. And the two characteristics of a basic data delivery service are going to be that it's either connection-oriented or connectionless. So either I do want to make a link with the opposite side and maintain that link over multiple back and forths of conversation, or I don't. Every time I send a message, I'll just, readdress it. Okay. The other dimension, of course, is loss versus net loss. Typically, the networks aren't going to make any guarantees about further performance requirements. Although, having said that, again, in more modern networks, there will be some negotiation possible about these bandwidth requirements or possibly even delay or jitter requirements. Okay, and so we'll look at how various wireless networks, at least at a point-to-point link level, make those negotiations. Back to the basic service, connection-oriented or connectionless. Well, from the network perspective, in order to offer that service, there's going to have to be some sort of resource allocation. And so this is done by sort of switching and multiplexing, so deciding what link you're going to use, and then possibly sharing out the resources on that link. Okay. There are two basic flavors of resource allocation, circuit and packet switching. Again, circuit switching is the idea we're making this end-to-end connection with all the resources we need over multiple links. Packet switching, we aren't reserving those resources, so we will need to, at every node, make some decision about where to go next. Okay. So we'll have a little discussion about those and how circuits and packet switching hook up with the idea of a service. We'll then talk about layered network architectures. Now, this is a concept that arose from the data network world, okay? Although in some areas it's co-opted by the telephone network as well, but they'll mean slightly different things, okay? And finally, I don't even know what we do is going to have an impact on quality of service. Okay. Again, historically, things were fairly straightforward. If you were carrying voice, you had very predictable requirements, and they were very regular. So if you reserved resources along an entire path, those resources actually weren't going to get used. Okay, so it was efficient to reserve resources and then. It was not efficient for data transfer to reserve the resources end-to-end. So we didn't. We bundled up our bits of data, and we sent them into the network. And we had a way of organizing the network then called a layered architecture that handled various aspects of that data transfer, both point to point and then end to end. Okay. Usually, and I'd say almost exclusively, when we're sort of discussing issues within the network, we will be talking about transporting packets. Again, there's nothing wrong with transporting a packet on a circuit switch, besides possibly efficiency. But we will be much less concerned with transporting streams of data. Okay. In terms of data transport, typically the delivery service offered by networks had two characteristics. It was either connection-oriented or connectionless. So you either made an end-to-end connection, not in terms of reserving resources, but just in terms of saying that I'm linking up one guy with another guy, or not. And then you could be reliable or unreliable, so you could make guarantees that the data would arrive or not. Okay. Again, originally nothing was said about quality of service, security, or any other aspect of data transport port, just those two very basic elements. Okay. So there's four combinations possible, either connection-oriented and reliable, connection-oriented, unreliable, connectionless, unreliable, or connection-oriented, reliable. That if you're an application and you have data transport requirements, then that's basically your choices. Okay. So if you're sending a voice stream, well, you probably want it to be connection oriented because, again, you're going to be sending a fair amount of data, not just a single command or keystroke. And it's going to have some predictable use requirements. But it doesn't necessarily have to be reliable. Indeed, you know, there's not much you can do if something gets lost. By the time you notice that, it's too late anyway. Okay. Okay. So that's the services. So we have these four services. If we think of our telephone networks and our data networks, they were designed to optimize a single one of those services. Okay. So basically, telephone networks were designed to optimize a connection-oriented reliable service, or back to unreliable service, and packet switching not connection-oriented service. Okay, so if you want the bolt-on quality of service, then this is an added extra. It's easier in the circuit-switched world because, you know, obviously with the reserved resources, more is in under the control of the network itself, and so it can make more guarantees. This is becoming more important, but arguably core networks are becoming more reliable, so you're not necessarily encountering as many problems in the core. So the problem with quality of service is being pushed to the edges, and this is where we'll look at it in terms of, again, this first wireless link. How can we support quality of service? Okay. So if we have circuit switching, then again, we're reserving our resources end-to-end. Performance is great, although we do require a call setup. Okay. What happens if the resources aren't available? Well, you cannot make that connection, therefore you are not allowed entry into the network at all. So each link can be subdivided into sublinks, and again, the two basic categories are either frequency division multiplexing and time division multiplexing, which means that either you divide up your spectrum into different carrier frequencies and send a different signal along each of them, or you divide up time into slices and you just allocate slices in sort of round robin fashion. Okay. Both of those techniques allow for unshared sublinks, so again, you can allocate that sublink to a specific user. Again, with with packet switching, we don't want to reserve resources, so we now have to share the network resources, and we assume that this is done on a sort of terminating or queuing basis, and that each packet gets the full resource when it's transmitted and only when it's transmitted. Okay. This is great because it allows, if there's anybody who needs the resource, then that resource can be allocated. If too many people need the resource, then, you know, there's a delay while you wait for the resource to become available. Okay, so that concept is what's referred to as statistical multiplexing. And so again, we don't reserve resources, so whenever you have data to send, you just send it. But if it arrives at a node which has already has data waiting to be sent, it has to just get in the queue and wait. So the plus of that, again, is that you always get access to the network. You're always allowed to send your data in. But now you're going to experience variable delay for that data.
So
okay, so you have the idea that your data is not traveling as a stream, but it's being chunked up into a certain size message. Okay, so then with packet switching, you add some information to that message, which allows it to move through the network. We'll talk about that in a minute. And we send it into the network, okay? So for now, think of, the main piece of information for now is the address of where it's going, okay? So I take some data I want to send, I break it up into manageable size chunks, and I address it to whoever I'm sending it to. There may be, your message may fit in one package or packet. It may require several packets. As it goes through the network, over each link it arrives at another node, and the node looks at that packet. In particular, it looks at the address. Based on that address, it decides where to send it, what link to send it out on. Okay.
Is the address
is on the terms of email? Yes. So there's an address in the header. Okay. So assume that I want to send it out on this particular link. Or there might be five packets ahead of that one that also need to go out on that particular link. So I'm put in the queue to be transmitted out when that link becomes available. So you transmit the packets, we'll again think for the moment just in order that they arrived. It does that for, it goes from node to node to node, with each node somehow thinking about what direction it needs to go in until it reaches its final destination. Okay. So if I'm sending a single message and it makes its way through the network, it encounters a certain amount of delay. If I'm sending more data, so my message or my data has to be broken up into over multiple packets, each one of those is being address and sent into the network separately. Okay. And so as they go through, they may take different paths, they may encounter different delays. Okay. Does that answer your question or? Okay, good. Okay. So if we ignore the scratching our heads and thinking about which link it's going out on and just think about the actual path the data takes, we see that there's two ways in which delay is introduced for the packet. The first is what's called, and I said this before, store and forward delay. So at each link, or sorry, at each node, we receive the packet fully, we examine it, we retransmit it. So each time you transmit it, it takes a certain amount of time to form the bits and actually push the entire packet out of your system. Okay. The second, again, is this idea of queuing. We're not guaranteed to be the only packet that needs to be transmitted along that path. So at each node, we may experience additional waiting times based on the usage of the node. Finally, the main cause of loss is if too many packets are waiting at a given node, eventually they run out of waiting room. So if that happens, then the packet is dropped. Again, arguably, this is becoming less and less of an issue because the core networks are actually being provisioned to support the data traffic that's there. Okay. So why do we use this packet switching? Again, because it allows us to have more users active in the network under the assumption that they are acting in a sporadic or bursty fashion. Okay. So here, this is a simple example. You can think about having a megabit per second link, and you have users who need 100 kilobits per second, but they only need that 10%. If we use circuit switching, then you can only have 10 of those users active at any given time. So you can only set up 10 circuits of 100 kilobits per second. With packet switching, again, you can let however many users want just send their data in. And if we examine 35 users, then the probability that 10 are active at the same time, so 10 would, more than 10 would be, 10 or more would be sending their data into the network at the same time, is very small. So what this means is even with the more users, they aren't likely to encounter any particular delay. Okay. So we've allowed more users in without compromising our performance. From a quality of service perspective, circuit switching is nice. It allows us to guarantee the bit rate. And you don't have store and forward or queuing delays. You do have to go ahead and connection setup. Packet switching You don't have any guaranteed throughput. You don't have any guarantees on delay, and frequently worse than that, you don't even have a guarantee on the variability of the delay. Okay, so packet switching is very unpredictable. Okay. On the other hand, again, it can be quite efficient. Okay, so we have this circuit switching versus packet switching. That refers to how we're allocating the network resources. Based on that, we can build services. So we can build connection-oriented or connectionless services. Again, they're two different concepts. You can have connection-oriented services on packet switching, I'll say TCP. You can have connectionless services on circuit switching. So that would be the idea of sending data through a telephone network, an old-style telephone network. Okay. Circuit switching, you know, depending on the type of data, can be much extremely less efficient from a network perspective. Okay, so rolling on to, I believe, our final topic for today. This topic relates to specifically data networks. Okay, and so the question is, so we've got these packets that we need to get from point A to point B. How do we organize the networks in order to do that? And you know, we have tasks that we need to get done. We need to transmit the packet from over a single link, make sure it gets there okay. We need to decide from link to link where do we send the packet. And ensure that it gets to its destination. We need to offer somehow within that connection or connection, we need to offer the network service, so this connection-oriented or connectionless service. Okay. The way in which data networks are almost invariably organized is what's called into what's called a layered architecture, where we take these tasks and we say that one relies on the next, relies on the next in order to be done. So, or typically relies on the lower task. So, being able to send an entire packet across a link relies on being able to, for instance, send bits physically across a link. Okay. The layers all have protocols associated with them, which govern the information that's sent through the layers and the services offered by the layers. Okay. Typically, there's two ways we look at the layered model. One is through the TCP/IP protocol stack, and that pretty much represents what's out there and implemented. So whatever else, I'm sure everybody's heard of IP and IP addressing. Okay. There's also the OSI reference model, which again was the original concept for the network organization in the fashion that it has been. Okay. Breaking the tasks up into individual pieces, those things are always intended to do, makes updating of any piece simpler, and allows for interoperability. Okay. So, if we think about, well, what sort of pieces do we need at all? Again, physically, you've got to have a way of transmitting your bits. So that's our first layer, is the physical layer, which is just sending bits. We've already said that this is packet switching, and we've divided our data into packets. So the second layer is handling, managing a packet. So instead of just a bit one at a time, we're now looking at packets one at a time. And so we're ensuring or not that the packet travels from point to point. The next thing we need, obviously, is relaying. It's not sufficient to go across a single link. We have to go through multiple links along the network layer. For this, we need some sort of addressing. So that's where IP comes in. IP gives you your identifier of each machine, each physical device, roughly. And based on knowing that address, you gotta decide where to go. And again, typically this is done on a hop-by-hop basis. So again, each node in the middle of the network examines the packet, says, oh, it's going there, I'll send it along this link and not that link. Okay. The transport layer is our interface layer now. So the application, again, it wants a service. It doesn't want to know about this stuff. And so the transport layer allows the application to request the service, either connection-oriented or connectionless. Okay, so that's end-to-end. Okay. It does a few other things as well, but for our purpose, we don't care. So it allows us to make that service happen on an end-to-end basis. And finally, we have the application sitting on top of that. That could either be something a user writes themselves, or it might be some well-known, well-established ones like file transfer, mail transfer, web browsing. So those are their standard protocols that are used for all of those. If we're talking about the TCP/IP protocol stack, then in particular, the network layer and the transport layer are well-defined. But again, the IP protocol specification and then TCP or UDP. Okay. You can use various different link and physical layers, depending again on the physical characteristics of the link and how you want to transmit the data. Okay, so again, we travel down the stack. And depending where we're going, we travel up and down various portions of the stack as we go from node to node to node. So when we start, obviously we're up at the application layer. We have to ask the network for whatever sort of connection we want. Either I just want to send this one message, or it's connectionless, or oh, I need to send some fair few things. I want to have a talk. I want to actually establish a dialogue with my destination. Okay. Then again, I have to address my data, so I need to say what the destination is, and then send it out into the network. And depending, as we're in the network, we may or may not go farther up the stack. If there's no question, if there's no question of multiple links, then all we need to do is transmit our packet and have it received. If it's possible, if you go different places, then we need to examine where to send it next. Okay. So, the final, and then when it gets to the destination, again, it's going to go possibly set up, all the way up and interact with a specific program or application. Now the final piece of this puzzle, again, is how the data gets packaged up. And so we start with user data, our message. This could be a command or to the, this could be a browsing command or something like that. And as it goes through the layers, again, each layer is going to add on the information that they need in order to correctly handle the packet. So here, for instance, we'll just add on a transport header, which again is going to give some indication of what we need to do in terms of the connection. The network layer is going to add on the addressing information so that we know where to send it. The link layer is going to add on a header that's going to allow us to process it, do things like error control, etc. And then the physical layer will allow us to move the information through the network. Okay. Okay. So at any given piece, again, you will travel upon receipt, you travel up the stack as far as you need to go and go further, and then you again repackage your data. And again, one principle which I referred to sort of earlier in terms of sort of maybe possibly being a drawback for wireless networks. Each layer as you go down regards not only the original message, but all the header information from subsequent layers as being just data. It does not concern itself excuse me, in any way with what the actual meaning of the information in the headers is. Okay. With wireless, sometimes that's sort of not particularly useful. Okay. So, again, the TCP/IP stack is sort of, it's the basic components that you need really to get sort of distributed computation going, and it's what's implemented. At the same time that the protocols in TCP/IP were being developed, work was going on in trying to describe and specify what should go into a network stack, okay, a layered architecture. And the layers that were arrived at were reasonably similar to what you have in TCP/IP, except we have these additional presentation and session layers, which were meant to specify things like encryption sessions, sort of adding more connectivity support. Okay. Again, the problem is that in terms of data networks, certainly at the time, nobody really thought those were that useful. Okay. Having said that, this was the first place where all the basic concepts were spelled out. And so the idea of data encapsulation, the idea of a layered architecture, were spelled out initially in this reference model. So people still talk about the layers relative to this model. They just don't talk too much about layers 5 and 6. Okay. So we can view a lot of our discussions in terms of this layered architecture, although arguably there are some things that are also going to fall outside of the architecture. So we will spend some time examining physical transmission, so radio systems. The main issue that's going to arise with the data link layer, so in terms of point-to-point links, is the idea of how you're sharing out this link. And in particular, we see this in the Ada 2 family. And we have convention-oriented versus contention-free allocations. And then that filters into discussions of quality of service. So in terms of the network layer, we have the idea of, you know, we do need end-to-end transmission, and the main thing we're going to look at is routing. And again, in the context of ad hoc networks, there are mobility support in the form of mobile IP, but that's more for moving from one network to another while maintaining your IP address. So, we won't cover that. Okay. We aren't really going to address the transport layer, although again it can play a role in quality of service. But again, our view of quality of service is going to be restricted to a single link. And again, we're not going to say a lot about specific applications beyond the fact that, you know, quality of service requirements are linked to applications. Okay, so how does the layered architecture relate to the networks that we're going to talk about? It depends on the type of networks. Doesn't relate very well at all to cellular networks because they came from the connection-oriented telephony end of things, not from packet switching. Their basic organization is still very much about creating connections. Possibly not as much about reserving the resources, it depends. But typically, some networks divide things into a control plane and a data plane, and so the control plane is going to, again, do all of this resource negotiation, then you send your data back. Okay. So it's a different way of looking at it than the layering. Okay. Wireless LANs, well, they're all about point-to-point connections, so they're talking to the access of the data link layer. Again, networks, it's all about getting things end-to-end, so the issues that arise there are more at the networking layer. Okay. So, that gives us some view of what we're going to be talking about this term. And hopefully, at least the vague idea of sort of what we're talking about when we're talking about networks. So you want to keep in mind this at least historical divide between data networks and telephone networks and have some, you know, again, picture in your mind about packet switch versus circuit switch networks. And again, the layering tends to help just because it'll crop up a lot in just any sort of discussion of any sort of network. Okay, so that's all we're going to talk about today. Tomorrow, also known as next Thursday, we will move on to, again, talking about the point-to-point radio links. Okay, so I'll see you guys next week then.